need just to mention before the shiur begins, Baruch Hashem, over the Pesach break, our Sefer family had a new arrival, and that is the Sefer Kul of Sinai, on a deeper look at the Torah, the Omer, and the festival of Shavuos, reading the cover. So copies are available for me with pleasure, and should be available more more broadly in the coming days. We turn our attention to the Parsha of Kedoshim. We pull ahead here in Eretz Yisrael until further notice. And leading the pack, we take a look at Parshas Kedoshim. Kedoshim begins, of course, with Kedoshim Tihyu. Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem. This is Perek Yud Tes Pasuk Beis. Speak to the entire congregation of the children of Israel, say to them, Kadoshim to you, be Kadoshim. Ki Kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem, for I, Hashem, your God, am holy. Rashi has a comment even before we get to Kadoshim Tihiyu, or even before Rashi lets us know his views on the meaning of Kadoshim Tihiyu. He already comments on the words, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, speak to the congregation of Israel. Melamed, says Rashi, Shene'emra parsha zo behakel. This teaches us that this section was said to the entire assembly. Mipnei sherov gufei Torah teluyim ba, because a majority or an abundance of basic Torah ideas are mentioned there or dependent upon it. Rov gufei Torah teluyim ba. So Rashi is alerting us to the fact that this parsha was communicated somewhat differently than the others. This was said behakel to the entire assembly. Rashi's source, this is not Rashi's own comment, this is sourced in the Teras Kohanim. But as we know, not everything that's in the Teras Kohanim makes it into Rashi. The question, of course, as always, is why does Rashi see fit to tell us this? Rashi's job is not to give us information. Rashi's job is to resolve any seeming difficulty within the pasuk. What is there about the pasuk that causes Rashi to comment? Well, the answer seems quite simple, and that is the introduction itself appears to be a departure from the norm. Normally, if one could say, the standard is in presenting something to B'nai Yisrael, Daber al B'nai Yisrael. That's how it goes. Daber al B'nai Yisrael, v'amarta aleihem. Here, the parsha is not introduced with the words Daber al B'nai Yisrael, but rather Daber al kol adas B'nai Yisrael. And there seems to be a more all-inclusive presentation to the entire assembly. And that's why Rashi says that there's something unusual here. The words kol adas b'nei Yisrael tell us that it was said behakel to all. Now, it's not that simple, because the truth of the matter is that as much as it's unusual for the pasuk to say el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, it's not unique. This is not the first time. We have actually already had two occasions in the Chumash before Kedoshim, where we have this expression, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael. They are, number one, and actually the first mitzvah ever communicated to the Jewish people, in Parshas Bo, HaChodesh HaZelachem, the mitzvahs of Korban Pesach and Shmos Perek Yud Beis are introduced by saying, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Rashi doesn't comment. Rashi doesn't say, kol adas, this tells us, it's behakel. No comment from Rashi on that occasion. Likewise, or similarly, in the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, Vayakel Moshe's kol adas b'nei Yisrael, and Rashi doesn't say anything. So in a sense, even though it's somewhat unusual, this is not the only time or the first time, why then was this the only time that Rashi saw fit to comment and react, so to speak, to this phrase, adas b'nei Yisrael? And this question is raised by the Raivad. Although the Raivad is famous for his critical commentary on Rambam's Mishneh Torah, he wrote many other things. Also, amongst them, a major parish on the Teras Kohanim. And the Raivad asks this question, Manishtana, the Adas B'nei Yisrael here from all the others. And the Raivad provides a straightforward answer, and that is that with regards to those other occasions, Korban Pesach, the Mishkan. Those were things where the matter was at hand. It was what we call al haperek. This was something that needed to be addressed imminently, immediately. The preparations for Korban Pesach, preparations for the Mishkan, and therefore Kol Hadas B'nei Yisrael seems very much in place. Everyone needs to know about it. Everyone needs to be told about it straight away. Parshas Kedoshim does not seem to be dealing with matters that are imminent in nature, but they're generally applicable, but not necessarily today or as opposed to tomorrow. They're not seasonal. And therefore, the words Kol Hadas B'nei Yisrael here raise a flag that they never did in Pshuta Shel Mikra earlier on. And that is why Rashi says that here Kol Hadas B'nei Yisrael tells us that there is something special about the nature of these mitzvahs, and that is why they were said to everyone. Shenemar parsha zo behakel, to all. Now, there is a major question which is raised by the classic Mefarshei Rashi. Here we are saying that there's something unusual, special about the contents of Kedoshim. They were said to everyone. The problem is, everything was said to everyone. As the Gemara actually outlines in quite some detail, the well-known section of the Gemara in Eruvin, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis, gives us the breakdown of how any given mitzvah in the Torah was communicated by Moshe to the people. And it's a few lines, and it's very worthwhile to hear the Gemara present what it calls Seder Mishnah, the way Moshe taught. In case you ever wondered what did a shir for Moshe Rabbeinu sound like, it sounded like this, or at least this was the way in which he communicated. Moshe Loman Mipi HaGevurah. It begins by Moshe learning from Hashem himself. So Moshe now has the information. What does he do with it? Says the Gemara. Nichnas Aaron. The first communication is just with Aaron. Vishonala Moshe Pirko. And Moshe then teaches him what he learned. Okay, that's stage one. A chavrusa, so to speak. Nistalik Aaron V'yoshev L'smol Moshe. Then Aaron goes and sits by Moshe's left, and Nichnasu Bonov, and then stage two is that Aaron's sons come in, his remaining sons, that is to say, Elazar and Itamar, Veshon Elhem Moshe Pirkan, and Moshe teaches them. Okay, then they go to the right and left of Moshe. Next, stage three, Nichnasu Zakenim. Who is the next group to be taught? The 70 Zakenim. The 70 elders, Vishon Alehem Moshe Pirkan, and Moshe teaches them. And then, finally, Nistalku Zakenim, Nichnasu Kol Ha'am, Vishon Alehem Moshe Pirkan, Kol Ha'am, the whole people entered and Moshe taught them. Which means, although it happened in stages, by the time we're finished, Moshe, as a matter of course, teaches the mitzvahs to everyone. If every mitzvah is taught to everyone, then what is unusual now about the contents of Kedoshim that Rashi says they're said behakel, they're said to the entire assembly. Everything is said to the entire assembly. And this question is raised by the foremost among Mefarshei Rashi, Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mizrahi, the Re'im. And as we'll see, of the answers, I'd like to present three of them, the first couple, in a sense, looking to see how this case, Kedoshim, was different. Says the Mizrahi, although it's a bit of a chiddush, it's possible that when we say Nichnasu Kol Ha'am, generally speaking, the populace comes in. It doesn't necessarily mean every single individual enters. It could be, for example, that the father comes, or the father of the household. Maybe he could attend the shir, and he can then go and communicate the contents to his family. It's with this in mind that Parshas Kedoshim was said behakel, which means everyone needs to be in attendance and hear it from Moshe Rabbeinu direct. Again, when we generally say that mitzvahs were said to Kol Ha'am means that they were said to representatives of the people. Each family could send someone to the shir, and he could then let them know about it. But here, everyone needs to be in attendance and hear it directly from Moshe. And in fact, Mefarshim point out that this is the connotation, as we know, of the expression hakel. The Teras Kohanim, Rashi quotes, says that this section was said behakel, because there's a mitzvah called hakel later on in the Torah, towards the end. And as we know, the Torah says, hakel es ha'am ha'anashim, hanashim v'hataf, men, women, and children. That's the connotation of hakel. And that was what was special about these parshas. You cannot hear it from someone else. You cannot delegate a member of the family to represent. Everyone needs to hear it directly from Moshe. That's the explanation of the Mizrahi. Maharal, in the Gur Aryeh, who's never far behind the Mizrahi in his comments on Rashi, Maharal explains, and again, it is in his own way a chiddush, quite a chiddush in fact. Again, if we're asking how is these mitzvahs different than mitzvahs generally, generally says Maharal, it could be that attendance at Moshe's shiur on a regular basis was not mandatory. As if to say, Moshe is teaching constantly. I mean, one may add parenthetically, what will you be doing if you're not in Moshe's shiur? We don't know. But having said that, the shiur is available for everyone, the transmission is available for everyone, but one wouldn't say that you had to turn up every day. Hopefully people did. The chiddush of Kedoshim is nochachut chova. Presence is mandatory. And interestingly, this explanation of how Kedoshim is different, meaning it's not voluntary at this stage for these mitzvahs, but rather everyone is obligated to hear them from Moshe, it has a precedent in an earlier commentary on Rashi. Although the well-known commentaries on Rashi begin with the Mizrahi and so on, which is already in the 1500s, but there were Peirushim on Rashi that preceded the Mizrahi. As far as I know, the first organized Peirush on Rashi was called the Sefer HaZikaron by someone named Rabbeinu Avram Bukharat. And in the Sefer HaZikaron, Rabbeinu Avram Bukharat, he already presents this explanation, which was then later echoed by the Maharal. The difference between them is that generally speaking, as we would say, whoever wants can come to the shir. When it comes to Parshas Kedoshim, it's unique, special, everyone has to be there. And in fact, the Sefer Zikaron adduces support to this approach from the Rambam. The Rambam, in his introduction to his commentary on the Mishnah, which is a major work which discusses many principles with regards to Torah, the Rambam has his own presentation of the Gemara that we mentioned. How does the Seder Mishnah go? Moshe, to Aaron, to his sons, to the Zakenim. And when it comes to everyone else, stage four, hearing the mitzvahs, Rambam's words are, V'acharkach nichnesu hamon ha'am ha'mevakshim es Hashem. Stage four is everyone, all those who are mevakshim es Hashem, who desire to hear Hashem's word, they would come in at the end and hear the shir. But it sounds like who was there? Whoever wanted to be there. Mevakshim es Hashem. That's the norm, and therefore our mitzvahs of Kedoshim are distinct in that it's not about Mevakesh es Hashem, but rather everyone needs to be there. So these are the resolutions of Mizrahi and Gur Aryeh, why, in what way Kedoshim are different than all other mitzvahs, which are seemingly said to everyone anyway. But there is an altogether different approach. Again, it begins with the Raivad. And the Raivad says, if you want to know how Kedoshim is different, remember that the Gemara says that normally the mitzvahs were taught by Moshe in stages. First to Aaron, then to his sons, then to the elders, and then finally to the rest of the Jewish people. That's the norm. What's unique, if we wish to know about the contents of Parshas Kedoshim, is that they were said b'hakel. That means to say that they were said to everyone all at the same time. There were no four stages in Parshas Kedoshim. There's only one stage, and everyone hears it at the same time. The question, of course, is why? As if to say, what difference does it make if people hear it in stages, if people hear it all together? At the end of the day, everybody heard either way, so what's behind this distinction that everyone needs to hear it together? And this question is addressed by one of the later classic commentaries on the Taras Kohanim. Again, Taras Kohanim is a field of its own with many, many Perushim, but one of the classics of the Acharonim, the Korban Aaron. And the Korban Aaron raises a different question. Rashi says, Kedoshim is said with everyone together because Rov Gufei Torah Teluim Ba. Literally, Gufei Torah means many bodies of Torah. That's an interesting way of referring to a group of halachas. Do we refer to a body of knowledge? Perhaps. But in terms of mitzvahs, to refer to them as bodies of Torah. One could say many principles of Torah, Klalei Torah, Yesodos Torah. Rabbi Akiva will famously say later in our parsha, V'atorecha kamocha is a klal gadol b'Torah. He doesn't say it's a guf gadol b'Torah. So what is the connotation of the idea of Gufei Torah? It's an interesting shaila. And the Korban Aaron says, let's ask, before we ask about the exception, why everyone was together in Kedoshim, let's ask a broader question. Why isn't everyone always together for all the other mitzvahs? Why does it normally happen in stages? And the Korban Aaron answers that if you look at what the Gemara said, the expression is that Aaron entered, stage one, Aaron entered, v'shono lo pirko. Moshe taught him his lesson. When his sons come in, shono lahem pirkom. He taught them their lesson. But that's interesting, because presumably, it's all the same lesson. So why are we talking about Aaron gets his perek, and they get their perek, and then the 70 get their perek, and then everybody else gets their perek? It's all the same perek. It should say, Aaron entered, and he taught him the perek, and so on and so forth. But the truth is, says Korban Aaron, as we know, there are many different levels at which a person can learn and understand Torah. There is the practicalities of the mitzvah, and there are the themes and the inner understandings of the Mishnah, which get more and more mystical and esoteric and higher, depending on the person. There is the what we would call the external casing of the mitzvah, its practicalities, and then the inner content and ideas within the mitzvah. And it's for this reason, says Korban Aaron, that generally speaking, the mitzvah was communicated in stages, because not everything that Moshe had to teach was for everyone. It's an amazing concept. Aaron comes in first because Aaron is closest to Moshe, and there are certain things above the mitzvah that are only to be communicated to Aaron. And that's why the Gemara says Aaron would come in v'shana lo pirko. Moshe would teach him his perek. He would teach him the aspects of the mitzvah that he is able to understand. Aaron's sons are also on a higher level, but not as high as Aaron, and therefore they come in separately, and Moshe teaches them pirkam. And behind them are the Shivim Zakenim. And they get Pirkam. And finally, you get the general populace who are on a lower level yet. And Moshe teaches them Pirkam. It turns out that what we call the four stages are descending not only in terms of chronology, but also in terms of the amount of inner content that was communicated to each group, to each recipient. Now, when we talk about the external practical parts of the mitzvah and the inner part, we understand that that clearly parallels the concept of a guf and a neshama, whereby the guf is the external casing and the neshama is the inner content. And thus we might say that generally speaking, mitzvahs were communicated by Moshe in stages because there were aspects of the neshama of the Torah that were for only for Aaron, and some that were only for his sons, and the 70 elders, etc. And that's the norm. But what's now unusual about the Parshas Kedoshim is that Moshe did not communicate it in stages. There was only one communication, and it was to everyone. But if that's true, well, what are the implications? The implications are that when it comes to these mitzvos, Moshe did not gradate the level of neshama that he communicated, but rather he pitched it from the outset to the lowest common denominator, that is to say, to the Jewish people themselves. That means that there was not much discussion of the neshama of Torah here. Rather, as Teres Kohanim says, Rov Gufei Torah Tiluyim Ba. The emphasis and the contents of Parshas Kedoshim was on Gufei Torah. And why? Because Parshas Kedoshim contains many mitzvahs that are Ben Adam Lechaveiro. And when it comes to Ben Adam Lechaveiro, and this is a commentary that Korban Aaron doesn't say this, but when it comes to Ben Adam Lechaveiro, as is true in many realms, the emphasis is much more on action as opposed to on the esoteric side of the mitzvah. It's about achieving a result. This expresses itself in a number of ways. We find, for example, generally speaking, we don't make brachas before performing a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, between man and man. Generally, a bracha is ben adam l'makom, because a bracha represents a very specific orientation, and the kavana is key, and the intention, and purity of intent, and so on and so forth. Very often, when it comes to helping a fellow Jew, purity of intention is good, but it's not as critical. If he needs help, he needs help regardless of intention. There are even those who say that as much as we say that mitzvah trichas kavana, that in order to fulfill the mitzvah, a person needs to have intent to fulfill the mitzvah, that's not necessarily true with regards to ben adam l'chaveiro. If you help the person out, even without kavana l'shem mitzvah, then the focus is on the person receiving the help that they need. The Hasidim put it in their way, because the Chadush Yerim asked the question, why is it that one doesn't make a bracha on a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro? So the Chadush Yerim says, you know, before you make a bracha, it's not a simple matter. You've got to put your gartel on, you've got to put your shtreimel on, you've got to get your kavanas ready. This poor guy could collapse in front of you by the time you're finally ready to perform the mitzvah. B'dechilu urechimu. It's 3 hours later and he's gone. And therefore the emphasis when it comes to these mitzvahs is on the guf. And therefore there was no gradation and there was no different stages. Hakel, everyone is together. So these are three wonderful pirushim as to how to understand how the hakel of Kedoshim was different than the general seder of Mishnah. Now, I'd like to move from here to one could call them the central mitzvahs of Parshas Kedoshim, and that's in Perik Yutes, Pasuk Yud Dalet. And as we'll see, quite a bit to say. Perik Yutes, Pasuk Yud Dalet. So the Pasuk states, Lo tekalel cheresh, which we've discussed in on a different occasion, not to curse a deaf man, v'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, and do not place a stumbling block in front of a blind man. V'yareisem elokecha, and the Hashem, and you should fear God, I am Hashem. V'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, the famous stumbling block, not to place a stumbling block in front of a blind man. And the question is, what does this mean practically? And as we know, and as we will see, the interpretations and applications of this mitzvah will split up into no less than three separate domains. Firstly, to begin with pshuto, or perhaps more correctly, mashma'o, the meaning of lifnei iver l'sitein michshol is bepashtus, as it sounds. Someone can't see, don't put something in front of them that you could trip over. Simple as that. In the physical realm, in the practical realm. And indeed, this interpretation is voiced by the Perush Yad Ramah, Rabbi Meir Halevi Abu Lafia, and his Perush Yad Ramah on Maseches Bava Basra. He's one of the Rishonim, famous actually for his opposition to some aspects of the Mishnah Torah. The Yad Ramah says, you know, the Torah tells you what to do if a person dug a pit and then someone fell in, and how much should you pay, and depends what it is and what are the circumstances. But where does the Torah actually tell you not to dig the pit in the first place? It just sounds like it's a fait accompli, or a pit accompli. It's done already. But is it okay to dig the pit if you can afford the consequences? Clearly not. But where does the Torah tell you not to dig the pit? Says the Yad Ramah, because it says, v'lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. Don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind man. If a person is walking in the public thoroughfare and he we might not notice the pit. So he's blind to all intents and purposes to that pit. And that's the prohibition. So that's kipshuto. That's the simplest understanding on the practical plane to physically put something where a person could trip over, and there's many applications to that. As we know, Chazal have additional interpretations of this prohibition. The Toras Kohanim, again, and it's quoted in Rashi, says, Lifne ivelotitein mirshom means, do not mislead a person with bad advice. If he thinks you have his interest at heart, but you don't, you are giving advice capriciously or selfishly for your own ends, even though it will lead him to a bad end. So he's blind, in a sense. You're misleading him. And in so doing, you're causing him to stumble. You tell him to sell. It's a bad time, but it's good for you, because things will crash, and you pick it up for nothing. That's you've misled a blind man. Eitzor ro'o. Eitzor sheina hugenislo. Bad advice. Thirdly, and this is voiced in the Gemara in a number of places, in the name of Rabbi Nassan, to provide someone with the wherewithal to violate an avera is causing a stumbling block in front of a blind man. Rabbi Nassan famously says, do not give a cup of wine to a nazir. Do not give aver min achai even to a Gentile. These are... You're providing them with the wherewithal. You're causing them to stumble. Certainly if they don't know that it's forbidden, because then they're blind. But as the Rambam adds, and if they do know and they want to do it anyway, so they're for sure blind. I mean, the Yetzirah is blinding them. It's the Rambam in the Halachas. These, then, are the three applications of Lifnei Iver. Again, firstly, the practical. So person's mamish cannot see to cause him to stumble. Secondly, bad advice for a person who doesn't realize you're leading them astray. And number three, to give someone the wherewithal to violate an avera, that's also lifnei iver, as per the Gemara. There's a very interesting question which is raised by the Mefarshim with regards to this third idea, to give a person the wherewithal to violate an avera. And that is, and as we'd appreciate, it's a lomdisha shaila. Is this a new prohibition? As if to say, there are 612 mitzvahs, and there's a 613th, which is part of which means don't give a person the wherewithal to do the avera. That's a separate thing. Or could it be that once the Torah has said, do not give a person the wherewithal to do an avera, it is effectively expanding the scope of the other 364 averas? As if to say, prior to this statement, a person cannot do an avera. Post this statement, the avera has been expanded not only to a person doing it himself, but also enabling or causing someone else to do the avera. As if to say, is this an independent prohibition to cause a person to do an avera? Or is it what we would call a sniff, like an attachment to the other 364? Now, that's a rather abstract-sounding question. We're Jewish, and we're entitled to ask, what difference does it make? At the end of the day, usur is usur. Is it part of that prohibition? Is it its own prohibition? Could it make a difference? Well, it happens to be that it could, and it seems that this is a matter disputed by Rishonim. And this is the analysis of Rav Waldenberg in the Tzitz Eliezer. You see, as we know, there are... the rule is, if a person is on pain of death, forced to violate an avera, so he should do it. Ya'avor va'al yehareg. That's the rule. He doesn't have to give up his life not to do an avera. But there are three well-known exceptions that what are called the cardinal sins: avodah zarah, gilui arayos, and shpichas damim, idolatry, and murder. For those three, a person needs to be prepared to give up his life and not to violate those averas. Says the Baal HaMor, one of the great Rishonim, Rabbi Mizrachi HaLevi, says the Baal HaMor in his comments to the end of the 8th parak of Masechet Sanhedrin, if an idolater comes to a person and says, I want you to sell this Avodah Zarah object to someone else, and I'm forcing you, says the Baal HaMor, a person needs to be prepared to give up his life and not to provide another person with the wherewithal to violate the Avera of Avodah Zarah. That's very stringent. And the Ran there in Sanhedrin disputes the position of the Baal HaMor. And the reason is, says Ran, because there are only three prohibitions that a person needs to be prepared to give up his life for. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Aris, and Shefichas Damim. Here, he's not worshipping Avodah Zarah. He's enabling someone else to do that. That's a prohibition, but that's called Lifnei Iver. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah, and it partakes of the rule that he should do it and not give up his life. That's the Ran's position. But what we see, says Rav Waldenberg, from the position of the Baal HaMor, is that he understands that once the Torah has introduced the prohibition against enabling a person to do an Avera, it's effectively expanding the scope of each of those 364 Averas, as if to say this now includes not only doing it himself, but also enabling someone else. As if to say, to cause a person to do Avodah Zarah is now a branch of the prohibition against Avodah Zarah, and that's why Baal HaMor says he can't do it, even on pain of death, because it's part of Avodah Zarah. Yehorek, Val Yavor, and this now is the machlokas, rather, again, abstract sounding, but with very direct results on that question. And indeed, one may see the Ran echo his sentiment elsewhere, because the Ran discusses, what if a person enables other people to violate Shabbos? So that's certainly an Avera, but he's not considered a Shabbos violator. We know there are certain halachas that apply specifically to a person who's what's called mumar l'chalal Shabbos. It's a league all of its own. So he's not violating Shabbos. He's enabling someone else to, and that's wrong. But it's a wrongdoing called Lifnei Iver. It's not a wrongdoing called breaking Shabbos. And therefore he wouldn't have the status of a Shabbos violator. It relates to the well-known opening Mishnah in Masechet Shabbos, where you've got the poor person on the outside and the Baal HaBayis is on the inside, and all the configurations of how to transfer from the inside to the outside. And the Mishnah says, if the Baal HaBayis holds it on his hand, and then the Oni reaches in, picks it up, and takes it out, so the Oni has done the entire Malacha, and the Baal HaBayis is scot-free. He didn't do anything. He made the object available, but he didn't actually do any of the act of transferring. Says the Ran, this Baal HaBayis, he's not a good person. Or maybe he is, but he's not doing a good thing. Because this is Lifnei Iver. He's just given a person the wherewithal to violate the halachas of Shabbos. True, says the Ran, but he's not a Shabbos violator. He's a Lifnei Iver violator. But not and that's the Ran, as we would say, Lishitoso. Lifnei Iver is its own distinct losase. And this would appear to be the understanding of most of the codifiers, very simply because they list Lifnei Iver as a separate losase in the Torah. If indeed the import or the contribution of Lifnei Iver was to say that all mitzvahs now include another aspect, it wouldn't be an independent losase. But it is, according to Rambam, Sefer HaChinuch, and almost everyone else. So that's with regards to the conceptual understanding of Lifnei Iver. And that brings us to one further fascinating question. Namely, the Torah says, Lifnei Iver l'sitein mirshel. Do not put a stumbling block in front of a blind man. And we ask, what type of mitzvah is this? And by that we mean, mitzvahs are generally divided into two categories. Ben Adam l'makom, Ben Adam l'chaver, between man and man, between man and his friend, between man and God, between man and his friend. Which one of them is Lifnei Iver? And amazingly, the answer seems to be that it depends. It depends which aspect of Lifnei Iver we're talking about. For we remind ourselves that Lifnei Iver has three applications. Either literally to cause a person to stumble, or to give them bad advice, or to give them the wherewithal to do an Avera. Says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, although two of these are clearly Ben Adam L'Chaveira, namely, to cause a person to stumble, that's Ben Adam L'Chaveira. To give a person bad advice, that's Ben Adam L'Chaveira. But when it comes to the third category to enable a person to do an aveira, says Rav Chanan Wasserman, it appears that that is ben odom lamakom, as if to say, when it comes to these aveiras, the Torah says not only that you can't do it, but you also can't enable someone else to do it. That's part of the aveira, as if, without getting back to the earlier question, but it leads into the aveira itself. Which means if the aveira that you enable them to do is ben adam lamakom, so too is this aspect of lifnei iver. You violated enabling a person. You were the cause of an aveira. And why do I say this? Says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Because generally speaking, the mitzvahs ben adam lachaveiro are between Yisrael. And all of that, it's between you as well. One should be on good terms and have goodwill towards all people. But the mitzvos of Ben Adam Lechaveiro are Ben Yisrael Li Yisrael. But didn't the Gemara say that if you give a piece of Eiver Menachai to a Ben Noach, to a Gentile, you violated the Lifnei Iver Ositein Mirshol? But Ben Adam Lechaveiro generally doesn't extend to Bnei Noach. Says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, because that part of Lifnei Iver is not been Adam Lachaveiro, it's been Adam Lamokka. That means that it's forbidden from Deed Eivim Menachai, and part of that, or in part of the camp of that mitzvah, is for you to cause him to violate that mitzvah. That's been Adam Lamokka, and it applies wherever there's an Aveira, Jew, non-Jew, it doesn't matter. So what's fascinating about this question is that normally we divide mitzvahs. There are certain mitzvahs which are ben adam lamakom, and there are other mitzvahs which are ben adam lachaveiro. And lifnei iver is a mitzvah where it depends which aspect of the mitzvah you're talking about. Some of them accrue to ben adam lamakom, and some of them accrue to ben adam lachaveiro. I think that's one for the books. That's quite a rare situation. The final question, I almost said finally before, but now it really is the final question, at least for now, with regards to lifnei iver, is where did all these additional interpretations come from? As if to say, on the face of it, the pasuk couldn't be simpler. Lifnei iver ositein mirshol. When I envisage what it looks like to violate that, it's quite clear. It involves a blind man, a stumbling block, and everything else is happens. But the Torah's Kohanim says it's about bad advice, which is a completely different plane. And then the Gemara says it's about giving him the wherewithal. I mean, why not just leave the pasuk kipshuto? Ma'ra'u al kocha. I mean, what do Chazal see to expand the scope of this mitzvah beyond pshuto? Well, says the Korban Aaron, very simply, the way that we have translated the pasuk so far is actually not what the pasuk is saying if you read it. Because again, lifnei iver ositein mirshol, and the common translation is, do not place a stumbling block in front of a blind man. So far, so good, until you translate it back into Hebrew. Because if we would say, do not place a stumbling block in front of a blind man in Hebrew, we wouldn't say lifnei iver ositein mirshol. Because titein doesn't mean place, it means give. The more accurate phraseology would have been v'lifnei iver lo tasim mirshol. That's perfect. Do not place a stumbling block. So now what do we do? Because the Torah didn't say what we thought it was saying all the while. And it can be disconcerting when that happens. But that's why, says the Korban Aaron, the Medrash and the Gemara, there's clearly more to the mitzvah than what we have said so far. Because if it's just about the physical stumbling block, it should have said tasim. Why does it say titain? Titain is something that you give from one person to the other. How do you give a person something that they will then stumble over? Well, you can give them bad advice, or you could give them the wherewithal to do an aveira. That's called titain. And therefore, and as we see so often, the words of Chazal are understood best when the pasuk is understood best, because it's the nuances of the pasuk, it's the all of these finer details that really are the basis of the words of Chazal. So says the Korban Aaron. Rabbi Ruchem Fishel Perlo, in his parish to Rav Sajugon Sefer Mitzvahs, says that the answer lies somewhere else. Again, the answer to the question, why are Chazal laying on further interpretations? Why not just leave it kipshuto? It's about causing physical damage and leave it at that. Says Rav Perlo, very simply, because that's already covered by another prohibition in the Torah. Causing physical damage is another prohibition. Where? In Parshas Kisetze. There is a mitzvah if a person builds a house, Vasisa Makele Gagecha. He's got to build a fence around the house. People shouldn't fall. And the Pasuk then says, continues, Velo Sasim Damim Bevesecha, do not place blood in your house. What is the meaning of those words, do not place blood in your house? The Gemara in Maseches Ksubas and elsewhere explains that those words are saying, don't have anything around that could cause a person to lose blood, to come to injury, or worse, lo sasim damim bevesecha. Now, and indeed, Rambam, as we see from the Gemara, that it refers not, it's broader than having a person who builds a house and then doesn't put a fence around it. Anything the Gemara says, you shouldn't have a dangerous dog in your house, right, that could injure people, that's lo sosim damu visecha. You shouldn't have a faulty ladder in your house that a person could unawares climb and then come to injury. Rambam, in Sefer Mitzvahs, Mitzvah Reish Tzadik Ches, which is, I think, rather an interesting location for a mitzvah such as this. If the mitzvah spells Retzach, you know that something is happening. Says Rambam, Shehezironu mehaniach hamokshim vehamichsholos. The Torah has forbidden us from placing any form to things that people could stumble or come to harm. Ba'artzeinu uvvateinu, in our land, in our houses. V'hu amro, as the Torah says, v'lo sasim damim beveisecha. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan Fishel Perlo suggests that the reason why Chazal saw in Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, in our pasuk, beyond causing physical damage, because physical damage is already covered by a prior mitzvah called Lo Sasim Damim B'Meisech. What's interesting is the Rambam lists Lo Sasim Damim B'Meisech and Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol right next to each other. 298 and 299. Reish Tzadik Ches we just read, Lo Sasim Damim B'Meisech, and Reish Tzadik Tes is Livni Evelu Sitein Michshol. And Rav Perlo suggests the Rambam put them together in order to accentuate this point, that the physical damage has been covered by the first one, Lo Sasim Damim B'Meisech, and that's why the second Pasuk refers to, our Pasuk Livni Evelu Sitein Michshol, refers to more broader forms of damage, bad advice, the wherewithal to perform an Aveira. It is also worth noting that the statement that lo sasim damim bevesecha means not to have a dangerous dog or a weak ladder, a faulty ladder, and the other statement that is lifnei iver to give a nazir a cup of wine or a ben noach, eiver min achai, were both made by the same person, by Rabbi Nassim in the Gemara. And once again, it's the same person, that's why he gives each one its different scope. One in the physical, and one in the more in the realms of bad advice, etc. I'd like to move back to the beginning of Kedoshim to you. There is yet much to say. And for the final few moments to ponder a statement of the Medrash. Again, it's in the Taras Kohen. The Pasuk says, again to see it in front of us, Kedoshim Tiyu, Pasuk Beis, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeich. So the Pasuk says, if we would read it in a linear sense, you should be holy, says Hashem, because I'm holy. Says the Teras Kohanim, Leimor, this teaches us, Im Mekadshim Atem Atzmechem, if you sanctify yourselves, Ma'ale Ani Aleichem Ki Ilu Kidashtem Osi. I consider it as if you sanctified me. That's what says Hashem. Im Mekadshim Atem Atzmechem, if you sanctify yourselves, Ma'ale Ani Aleichem Ki Ilu Kidashtem Osi. I consider it as if you sanctified me. Now, before we ponder the meaning of this statement, we should note the Parshanut, because the cause and effect is completely reversed now in the pasuk, and the word ki needs to be reassessed. We understand there's two things, your holiness and Hashem's holiness. It starts with kadoshim to you, ki kadosh, because I'm holy, as if to say Hashem's holiness is what's behind the mitzvah of kadoshim to you. And lo and behold, the Torah's Kohanim reverses the causational sequence and states rather that kadoshim ti you, you have a mitzvah to be holy, ki kadosh, because through that, says Hashem, I will be holy. Ki ilu kidash demosi. But of course, ein hamedrash hazeh omer ela darsheni. The words of the Torah's Kohanim are seemingly impossible to understand. Because how what does it mean to sanctify Hashem? Hashem's kedusha, whatever that means, is infinite, self-contained. It's not something which is affected or increased or improved upon by people sanctifying themselves. Clearly a very, very challenging and problematic statement. Says Meshech Chachma. And by way of preface, it is often true, whenever we talk about qualities or attributes of Hashem, we're talking about them as they express themselves in our world. For Hashem himself, there's very little, if anything, that we could say. Zohar famously says, quoted by the Palatanya very often, "Les machshava tefisa beklal," no thought can grasp Hashem himself. So when we talk about Hashem's qualities, they're as they express themselves in this world. Hashem's kedusha, as is injected and expressed in the world, is indeed a function of the Jewish people sanctifying themselves. And the question is, what does it mean for the Jewish people to sanctify themselves? And that leads us to the core question, what does kadoshim tihyu mean? And there's many explanations, and Rashi comments, Ramban is a famous comment, and others. But the truth is, says Meshech Chachma, the concept of kadoshim tihyu is much more accessible. It's not in any way abstract. The Torah, Hashem has given us the program of Torah and mitzvahs. And each one has its own domain. And what is the tzad hashava shebahem? If one could sum them all up, if one could encompass them with a vision, what's the goal? Where are they meant to be leading the Jewish people? What do they represent, and what's the theme that permeates all of them, it runs through all of them? The answer, says Meshech Chachma, means Kedusha. And what does that mean? There is a concept called Hekdesh. Hekdesh means something that belongs to on high. It's possible to take a mundane object and place it in the domain of on high. That's called Hekdesh, that's called being Makdesh something. The goal of the mitzvahs is in each setting, whatever it may be, daily, weekly, situationally, contingently, all the mitzvahs that meet a person, that guide a person, are to bring them to a way of living whereby they say that they are in Hashem's domain. They belong to Hashem. That's what encompasses and defines their life. It's like Hekdesh. Kadoshim Tiyu is like Hekdesh. To whom do you belong? Who are you connected to? That's called kadoshim to you. The more of that we do, the more we place Hashem, the more we place ourselves in Hashem's domain through that vision of what the mitzvahs represent to belong to Him. The more kedusha commensurately comes into the world. Now, says Meshech Chachma, we should appreciate. Human beings, or and then the Jewish people even, are not the only entities that can relate to Kedusha, that can appreciate Kedusha, and can connect with Kedusha. There are beings that are, so to speak, higher than human beings. There are Malachim. They also relate to Kedusha. Is there any difference between us and them? There is a major difference, and that is the relationship of Malachim, all of these entities and beings in the higher realms, they do not choose to connect with Kedusha because they don't have that faculty of free will. It is their nature to appreciate it, and if they don't have that nature, they can't attain it. Which means all of the Malachim, and they say Kadosh, Kadosh, and they appreciate it, and they connect with it, and they exist based on it, but that's their nature to exist that way. It is only human beings, and at the center Am Yisrael, whose relationship with Kedusha is one of choice, they have the natural capacity and natural propensity towards Kedusha. But it's not, nothing is guaranteed. It's a product of the choices of the Jewish people. And what is the difference? That's the difference in quality. But what's the difference in practicality? The difference is, says Meshe Chochma, adding Kedusha to the world only comes by people who choose to associate with Kedusha, to subscribe to Kedusha. And thus, he says, a malach can do nothing to add Kedusha in the world. He can bring Kedusha in the world as a conduit. Malachim are the conduits through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu injects supervision and content into the world. And therefore, a malach can be the means through which Hashem transmits Kedusha into the world. But he cannot bring about an increase in that Kedusha. The increase only comes from Bnei Yisrael, who choose to associate with Kedusha. And then, says Meshe Chochma, this will give us a perspective, and I think it can really change the way that we track what happens during the morning davening. Towards the end of Shacharis, it's almost over, but you've got Ashrei, and then there's a Kedusha with translation into Aramaic. That's called Kedusha de Sidra. In Uva Letzion. We start by Atah Kodesh, Shei Shetilas Yisrael, so Kodesh Kodesh, and Baruch Shem Kuvin, Baruch Kuvin Hashem Kuvin. That's called Kedusha de Sidra. The Gemara, in the end of Maseches Sota, speaks in very high praise of this short section of Kedusha. It goes so far as to say that from the time the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there are only two things the world stands on, and one of them is Kedusha de Sidra, which propels it to very, very lofty heights. And what's interesting is, as important as it is to say Kodosh, Kodosh, etc., it's important for all that proclamation, but let's ask a basic shaila. It's not the first Kedusha. What about when everyone is saying together Kedusha in Shmona Esrei? That's even before we get to, or more correctly, both of them are after the first Kedusha in Yetzer, but the first ever institution of Kedusha is in Chazaras Hashatz, in the Chazan's repetition. And the Gemara looks at that Kedusha and Chazan's repetition. The Gemara says, well, it's very nice. And then when we get to this final Kedusha, the Gemara says, the world stands on this. Why does it stand on the Kedusha of after Uva Letzion and not on the Kedusha of Shemona Esrei? Says Meshe Chochma, something has happened in between these two times. And it's very interesting to consider that we talk about the Malachim in the Chazan's repetition. The Kaddish Shimcha Ba'olam, Keshem Shimaktishim Aso B'Shmei Marom, and the Zafanim, and Chayos HaKodesh, and we don't mention Malachim in the final Kedusha, we just kind of get down to it. If we close our Zevamar, and off we go. What's happening? It says Meshe Chochma, while we're davening, and there is no greater, well, I shouldn't say no greater, but one of the primary associations with Kedusha is the direct encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in davening. It's in place of a korban. And what do we say? We're looking to emulate the Malachim. It's very interesting that Meshe Chochma doesn't mention the first Kedusha. I don't know why. But in the first Kedusha, it sounds like we're not even looking to emulate. It really is a progression. The first Kedusha, we just describe them. The Malachim do this, the Malachim do that. They say Kodesh, Kodesh, they say Baruch Hu. What about us? Nothing yet. We're just describing them. That's how it starts. We see what they do, and we note it as we move into Shema. But as we get into Shemona Esrei, we then go from, we move, shall we say, from observation to emulation. Whereby not only we're saying that's what the Malachim do, but we're saying, and we'd like to do that. We'd like to be like that. We'd like to emulate the Malachim. And that we do with the Kedusha of the Chazan's repetition. Okay, so what have we achieved by emulating them? So now we're the same as them. But the truth is, by the time davening is over, we are more than the same as them. because it is their nature to say Kodesh, Kodesh. It's our choice. And therefore, if we choose to emulate them, we actually supersede them. And that's what's expressed in the final Kedusha after Avodat Siyah. We introduce it in a very interesting way with the words, Va'ata Kodosh Yoshev Tehilos Yisrael. And what do we mean by that? That's the lead into this final Kedusha. What are we saying? We're saying to Hashem, you're Kodosh, but you're Yoshev Tehilos Yisrael. Your Kedusha itself is self-contained and infinite, but you're Yoshev. You rest on, as if to say, you depend on for bringing Kedusha into the world. On what? On Tehilos Yisrael. And then we say the final Kedusha. And we're no longer looking to emulate the Malachim, because the Jewish people have, by this stage, superseded them. It's an amazing thing. And moreover, says Meshe Chachman, this is a further Kiddush. That's why we then translate it into Aramaic. As we know, we always... When do we revert to Aramaic in our davening? When we're looking to avoid a skirmish with the malachim. We're looking to avoid jealousy on their part, whatever these concepts mean. Or we're looking to avoid criticism on their part. The malachim, that's why Kaddish is in Aramaic and so on and so forth. And then we say this final Kedusha, and then we adjust it into Aramaic. Why? You've got to move into Aramaic at this point, because the malachim, they if they're jealous of the Jewish people at this stage, it's with just cause, because the Jewish people have superseded them. And therefore, it's time for a bit of Aramaic. The Chiddush of the Meshech Chochmah is that, unlike other Aramaic things, we actually begin with a translation. So they're not left wondering what just happened. We start with the Hebrew and then translate into Aramaic. That's unusual. But be that as it may, you've got to have a dose of Aramaic, because we're looking to avoid the jealousy of the Malachim. And they should be jealous. That is the comment of Meshech Chochmah. And that's why the Medrash says, if you sanctify yourselves, it's like you sanctified me, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, the more you sanctify yourselves, the more of Hashem's Kedusha comes into the world. What the Meshech Chochmah has done for us, aside from everything that we just described, which is out of this world, it is literally out of this world, but he's taken the concept of Kedusha, and I think out of abstraction, because Kedusha now, it is a very firmly defined statement of how you view yourself through the mitzvahs that you do. To whom do you belong? What's the goal of these mitzvahs? Who are you attaching yourselves to? And if the answer is to Hashem, that's called Kedusha, because you belong to Hekdesh. And it now becomes very accessible, and it encompasses the totality of mitzvahs. Ben Adam Lamokom, Ben Adam Lachaveiro. And that gives us, I think, a new perspective on the rest of the 613 mitzvahs now. Because prior to this, there's different concepts. You know, there's doing mitzvahs, and that they're very good, and they're very important, and then there's Kedusha, and we don't really know what that means, and all of a sudden, it means that. It means all of those things. All of them, if they're accompanied by this vision, they lead a person to Kedusha. And no less Ben Adam L'Chaveiro as Ben Adam L'Makom. That's the point. To say the Torah has these two categories, and they both lead a person to Kedusha. And this brings us back to where we started at the beginning. The Parsha of Kedoshim Tiyu is said to Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, to the entire assembly, says Rashi, B'hakel Nemar. It's said to everyone. It's said in the presence of everyone. Why is the Parsha of Kedoshim said in the presence of everyone? Because Kedusha can be achieved in the presence of everyone. The Kedusha is not an elusive idea that a person needs to secede and detach themselves from others in order to pursue it. Sometimes a person needs to be by themselves, that may well be. But the subtotal of Kedusha, it comes from everyone. And it comes from involving oneself with everyone. It comes as much from V'ahavta Re'echa Kamocha as it does from V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha. You can't do V'ahavta Re'echa Kamocha unless you're Bahakel, unless you're together with people to see their needs, to see their sensitivities, and so on. And this, therefore, is the goal of Kedusha, and that is why it has had that distinction that it said, Bahakel, Sherov Gufei Torah, Teluyim Ba, leave it over there.